Evelyn Berkby is a wife, mother, homemaker, newspaper columnist, author, and radio personality who for 63 years has enchanted her audience with her honest, chatty ways, her warm stories, and wonderful recipes. Daughter of a Methodist minister and a musical mother, Evelyn lived most of her early years in small towns in Iowa. After college, she taught school for 4 years and worked as director of religious education in the Grace United Methodist Church in Waterloo, Iowa. She later became youth director at the First United Methodist Church, Chicago Temple, in Chicago. Evelyn married her high school classmate, Robert Berkby, and in 1948, they moved to a small farm south of Farragut, Iowa. Through the years, she has worked in various positions in her local United Methodist Church, the district, and on our annual conference and general United Methodist Church committees. Since 1949, Evelyn has written a weekly column on rural life in Iowa. The column titled Up a Country Lane was first written for the Shenandoah Evening Sentinel and currently for its successor, the Valley News Today. Since she started writing this column 63 years ago, Evelyn has the remarkable record of having never missed her weekly deadline. Evelyn has also been a radio homemaker, broadcasting her warm words of wisdom on rural life over a 5-state area on radio station KMA in Shenandoah, Iowa. For more than a quarter century, Evelyn also was a regular monthly consultant for Kitchen Clatter magazine. How many of you remember that magazine? Me too. And broadcast on the syndicated Kitchen Clatter radio program. Evelyn still airs a monthly radio visit with the KMA listening audience. Evelyn is the author of 11 books, Neighboring on the Air, published by the University of Iowa Press, describes the heyday of radio homemakers. Her book, Up a Country Lane, also published by the University of Iowa Press, stitches together stories, photographs, and recipes from Iowa life in the 1940s and 1950s. Her most recent book, published last September by the University of Iowa Press, is Always Put a Recipe and Other Tips for Living from Iowa's Best Known Homemaker. Evelyn is the mother of 3 adventurous sons, 1 remarkable daughter-in-law, a perfect grandson, and a delightful granddaughter. Evelyn and her husband, Robert, live on a picturesque Honey Hill in Sydney, Iowa. Friends, would you join me in welcoming Evelyn Berkby? I think it works.
Let's see if it works. Testing. All right, just so it's close. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Bill. Thank you so much. I need to get this so you can hear me. This is wonderful and such a great group. I feel right at home. I was born a Methodist. I'm going to happily die a Methodist. So that makes me a PK also, because my father was a Methodist minister, just like you people. So I feel right at home today. This is such a joy. Last spring, Bishop Trimble came down to Shenandoah, Iowa, where he helped us at the church there, where they were having their 100th anniversary. And before dinner was over, he had sent someone over to ask him if I'd come and speak today. So this started way last spring. And thank you so much, Bishop Trimble. And it was such a joy to reconnect today and to hear you speak. Thank you so much. I want to also introduce my son, Bob, one of our exemplary sons. Bob, where are you? Oh, he's back in the back. He's got his camera in his hand. I wonder what he's doing. And he brought with him from Seattle, where he lives, a friend, Jenny Douglas, who originally came from Australia and liked us well enough to stay. So we have wonderful immigrants in this country. And we are so happy to have Denny here as one of our specials. So I grew up in a minister's home, which makes me a PK. I don't need to explain that to you. You'd be surprised how many people say, "What's a PK?" Well, I'm Exhibit A. I moved to Iowa in 1922 when I was 3 years old. That puts my birth time, 1919, right at the end of the First World War. My father was deep into the influenza epidemic. Now, I didn't remember those days, but Dad would talk about the times when he would go to a home where someone was dying and then go back again before the day was over. Such a sad time. And I think of all Methodist ministers who had a part in bringing some kind of love and care and compassion to those people. We came to Iowa from Illinois. Dad had gone to Garrett for his theological seminary work, and my mother, who lived in central Illinois, had gone to Northwestern for a music degree. She was a pianist and a singer, a very loving lady, the perfect preacher's wife. And you know, when a minister is assigned to a parish, they get his wife too. Oh, okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you. They met over a piece of blueberry pie at a boarding house where Dad had gone to get lunch. And there was my mother eating a piece of blueberry pie, and he fell in love with my mother. Two years later, he proposed, and 2 years later, they got married. This was the olden days. People took their time then. He also had to graduate and was assigned to a little mission charge out in Talmo, Kansas. He was raised in Kansas. And I need to mention, he became a Methodist and decided to become a minister in the little school house, not far from where they lived, where he grew up. And the Methodist circuit riding preacher came by and had a revival meeting, and he and two of his brothers became Methodist preachers. The circuit riders dropped off the seeds of Methodist churches all across the country, just like Johnny Appleseed did with his seeds for the trees. Little, beautiful, mostly white country churches. And some of my favorite memories are of those kind of places in my life, because Dad served many of them through the years. Well, we moved to Iowa because Dad had a cousin who was preaching in Perry. His name was Charlie Edmondson. And do you know, if I remember right, he was there 16 years. They don't do that in the Methodist Church. 16 years of pastorate. Then he went to Oskaloosa and was there a number of years until his death. But Cousin Charlie talked my dad into coming to Iowa. Now I was 3 years old, and we moved to Madrid. Madrid Slater was the charge, and it was a Swedish community. A lot of the Swedish folks had immigrated because there were coal mines in the area at that time. You remember, there were a lot of coal mines in Iowa for a while. Not very good grade coal, so they didn't last a long, long time. Dad would go out calling in his Swedish parishioner's home, and on the back of the old coal range would be a coffee pot. Every house he went to offered him a cup of coffee, which of course he drank, because he was their pastor and he was loving and kind. And when he came home, he would come in the house laughing, and he said, "I feel like I'm sloshing. I drank so much coffee." While we were at Madrid, several things happened to me. I got to be 5, and the 31st of July is my birthday, and I started first grade. They didn't have kindergarten then. The other thing that, I would come home. I walked. You know, my dad might take me if the weather was real, real bad, but the kids walked. In those days, kids walked a lot. I brought home every stray animal I could find. From day one, I loved little animals. It's a good thing, because I raised 3 boys, and they brought home all even a skunk once. Yeah, we had that skunk for quite a while. His name was Sniffles. But back to being 5 years old, starting school, I would bring the little kittens home, and I would say, "Could I keep them, please?" And once in a while, I could. Not all the time, though. The other thing that happened in Madrid was the last of one of the big Chautauquas. I can still remember a little bit of that big Chautauqua. Chautauquas included education and music and entertainment and religion. They always had a preacher of some kind, and guess who came to Madrid that year. He was a preacher that had been raised in Iowa, and his name was Charlie Goff, the boy evangelist. The boy evangelist. He and my dad were immediate friends. They loved each other immediately. And it was a lifelong friendship. My dad kept in touch with him all his life, and he came back in my life in 1943. Way down years later. We moved to Dexter after 4 years in Madrid. I remember somewhere along the way going to conferences. This was the Iowa Des Moines Conference. The state was divided in 2 conferences, the North Iowa and the Iowa Des Moines Conference. So it wasn't as big as it is now. I don't think maybe the bishop had quite as much to do if he had just, you know. But I don't envy you, Bishop Trimble. You have a huge job in what you do and keeping track of all these people, all these people. I went to conference. The first memory I have is of going to a big church somewhere. And I sat up in the balcony on Sunday night, the last day of conference. It was in September. Why they moved in September, I don't know. But here were school kids being moved in September. Me, especially. We were listening to the appointments being read because we did not know until that moment if we were going to move or not. We didn't know where we were going, and we had to be there in a week so that Dad could preach the following Sunday. Oh, it was exciting. I thought God made these appointments. I didn't learn about the bishop until the cabinet till several years later. But it was exciting. It was very exciting to do that. So we moved to Dexter. Dexter is where the world suddenly appeared on our doorstep. Missionaries arrived, students, young people. My favorite was a young man from China, and he called me his little sister, and he gave me a box. Harry Ling was his name. He gave me a little black teakwood box. I got it out last week and looked at it. And I loved him immediately, and he loved me, and I learned so much about China. And we had missionaries from many places that came. We had the Rust College Singers. Now, you all know that Rust College was started by an Iowa minister who went down after the Civil War and started this school so that ex-slaves, freed slaves, could learn to read and write. So the college started as kindergarten or first grade, teaching these people, these ex-slaves, how to read and write. And as they progressed, the school progressed until it became a college that today is a wonderful college. How many of you visited down to Rust College? Yes, yes, I have too. A wonderful school. And here would come their singers. Sometimes it was their chorus. Sometimes it was a quartet. We'd put them up in our house. My sister and I'd have to sleep down on the couch and let them have the bedrooms. And we loved every one of those people. And it was such a pleasure to meet them. Penn Center was, and I think it still is, On with Dexter. Is it still On with Dexter?
Earlham.
Or On with Earlham now. Okay, Penn Center was On with Dexter then. My dad had that, and we loved going out there. Oh, this is where I learned about potlucks. And one, I have written a lot about the church experiences, and this is my latest book. And there is a chapter in here about potlucks. I grew up on potlucks. I think all PKs did. And that's why I lived so long. Yeah. All that good food. And every town I'd go to, I'd had to figure out who cooked the kind of food I liked the best. Then I'd go to a new town, and I'd have to figure it out all over again. But we always had, the first thing we ever did when we'd go to a new town, they'd have a potluck for us. And you didn't have to tell people to bring well-filled baskets. They just did it. I think Methodists are the best cooks in the world. Penn Center is a beautiful country church. Not the little bitty white frame church. It's a pretty outstanding looking building. My dad was having a revival meeting, and as loyal family, we went along to support him. I was now 12 years old, so I was old enough to really listen to this message, and when Dad gave the altar call, I went forward. I knelt down on the plush carpet in front of the curved wooden altar rail, and confessed all my 12-year-old sins. The next night, we went back supporting our dad, and he gave the altar call, and I went forward. And I knelt down on the soft plush carpet in front of the wooden altar rail and confessed all my 12-year-old sins. The third night, we went back for the next revival service, and when Dad gave the altar call, I went forward, and I knelt down on the carpet in front of the wooden altar, and this was different. Dad came around from the pulpit, and he knelt down beside me, and he said, "Evelyn, you've confessed all your sins, all you need to. You don't need to anymore. You can be happy now." And I've been happy ever since. One of the things that I learned about parsonages was that most of the ones in our day had been donated to the church. And they were big, old, usually square buildings with great big rooms and sometimes a pipeless furnace. You know what a pipeless furnace is. One register in the middle of the whole house that went down into the big old coal furnace. We always had big old coal furnaces. And this time that we were in the house with pipeless furnace was just one big register. And then the heat went up into the second story through the hole in the floor of the downstairs. And real, real pretty. What did they call those? They had real pretty coverings, but the heat could go up. They didn't have insulation, and they didn't have air conditioning. And they were big old houses, and they always, the committees, painted them green. I'm not going to ask you how many of you went into parsonages where they always painted them green. And one time I got up courage to talk to the parsonage committee, and I said, "Why do you always paint everything green?" And she said, "Well, because everybody likes green. And if we ask the minister's wife what color she'd like, and we painted it that color, then the next time the next minister's wife would want to tell us what color she liked, and we have to paint all over again." So everything was always green. The other thing I remember is that every place where we moved, they came and got us from the place we were going with farmers' trucks. I never remember a moving van. Was that a time when maybe they didn't have moving vans? I don't know, but it was cheaper because they could just come with the farmers' trucks and they could pack us up and off we'd go, and we'd have to be there by the next time. So that was Dexter and Penn Center. We moved then, the next church that Dad went to from Dexter Penn Center was Prairie City. So now we were on another side of Des Moines. We were just circling Des Moines. Prairie City is an offshoot of Pella. Very Dutch. They have Dutch Reformed churches there. And this nice big Methodist church. And now I was in seventh grade when we moved there. It was the beginning of the Great Depression. The first funeral Dad had was of the local banker who committed suicide. I had grown up in a minister's home. I knew about death. I knew it was part of life. We accepted that. But Prairie City had some serious problems. There was a fire where four members of a family were killed. Dad had the funeral with the four caskets across the front. He had a family, a beautiful family, who were struck by a drunken driver on a beautiful Sunday afternoon on a flat stretch of road. The drunken driver, he was celebrating his 21st birthday, and he drank too much. My dad never liked liquor from his days in Chicago and North at Garrett, because he saw too much of it there. But this really solidified his desire to fight against drinking. He wouldn't even drink Coke out of a bottle because he said it reminded him of drinking liquor out of a bottle. Oh, Methodists were rigid. They didn't smoke. They didn't drink. They didn't gamble. They didn't play cards. They didn't dance. I grew up very rigid, didn't I? But my dad was a little bit more relaxed than my mother. And when I finally went to college, which I'll talk about in a minute, was the first year, well, I'll tell you, Methodist Simpson College. The first year they had school dances. And I went to my dad and I said, "I want to go to those dances. May I go? May I have your permission?" And Dad said, "I've always wanted to dance." Do it in the right way, in the right place, with the right people, and you have my blessing. Well, my mother was not pleased. This was against everything she believed. But She couldn't cancel out what Dad had told me. Women didn't do that in those days. If their husband said jump, they jumped. But we won't go into that. We won't. Prairie City, I graduated from eighth grade, and I had the first store-bought dress I ever had in my life. Mother was a good seamstress. She sewed for my sister and me. My sister was 6 years older, and so when she outgrew things, then my mother would make them over for me. And we had a cousin, a little better off than the preacher's family, and she would send some of her clothes when she outgrew them or didn't want them anymore. We happily accepted those mission barrels, and that was fun. But now we went into Yonkers here in Des Moines in the basement where they had the sale clothes and picked out a lovely organdy dress with three different colors, and I just thought I was a princess. Ever see the program on television about Say Yes to the Dress, where people are picking out $5,000 wedding dresses? Well, I won't tell you about my wedding cost $100 for the whole thing, including my dress. Anyway, I was a very happy eighth grade graduate there. And then my sophomore year, God, the bishop, and the cabinet moved us to Waukee. Now, it was a little bitty town, and it was 10 whole miles on west of Des Moines. Little bitty town. I told my son, Bob, I wanted to go back because he's driving me home today to Sydney. I want to go back through Waukee. I have been there a time or two, but I have not seen their new church. I don't know if the old one is still there, but that was a happy 2 years. Whenever we moved and I was sad, my dad would say, it's okay to be sad. After all, that shows you had a good time here. But you look forward to what's going to happen. You're going to meet new people, and you're going to be in a new town, and you're going to have new adventures. We're going to have fun. He would get up in the morning, and he would say, it's going to be a good day. Today's going to be a good day. And that made me in the habit of being positive every day, which is another reason I live so long. I don't think negative people live as long as positive people do. So I'm in for the long haul. After we left Waukee, and that was a hard move for me because I loved the school and I loved the kids and had many good friends there, we moved to Sydney, down in the southwest. I mean, you go to Sydney and you push us a little, we fall into Missouri and Kansas and Nebraska. We're at the end of Iowa. But it was a big town as far as I was concerned. It's a county seat town, and a big class. And the parsonage was right near the church, so people could come and borrow a cup of sugar if they needed it, or get some tea towels if they ran out at the church. Made it very convenient. Now, when churches build their parsonages, they do them down the road a ways, you know, so the family doesn't have to just live right next door. But it was fun to live next door, too. And Sydney was a very interesting community. Now, we were nearing the end of the Depression because the war was beginning to happen in Europe. And this is what made a difference as far as the Depression was concerned. But you know all that. Sydney was a very interesting place, and I graduated from high school there. And then I went to Simpson. For 2 years, you could go and earn a teaching certificate. I couldn't have gone if Simpson hadn't awarded Methodist ministers' children their tuition. I don't know what it is now, but at that time, because it was a very difficult time, I think all of the Methodist schools in Iowa did that. And that made it possible for me to go. And I could talk for the rest of the morning just about the experiences I had there. In fact, I wrote one of my columns, because this is a book about my favorite columns. And it's in the book here about my experiences there at Simpson. 2 years I went to school there. And then I taught school in Carlisle. Now I'm all the way around Des Moines. So I know Des Moines very well, and I love this area of the state. I went to Tripola to teach, way up in the northeast corner of Iowa. They paid more. I got $65 a month in Carlisle. When I went to Tripola, it was $125. I really was... I went down to Waterloo and bought me a couple of outfits, brand new. Oh, I think I spent all of $10. I taught school in Tripola for 4 wonderful years. I loved it. Third grade, had a wonderful time there, and then my father died in Farragut. They had moved to Farragut. He had the Farragut Church and the Madison Church, and I wrote a story here about that little country church in Madison. So my life changed dramatically. My mother moved up with me, and James Marlin was the minister in the Grace Methodist Church in Waterloo, and he knew Dad. So he sent word to me. He wanted me to come. And he wanted to talk to me about Dad. And while I was there at his church in Waterloo visiting, he said, "We need a director of religious education. You have a religious background. You have an education background. Will you come?" And I said, "I would love to have the opportunity." Kind of going in the footsteps of my dad. So Mother and I moved down to Waterloo. Harley Farnham was the next minister to come there that I worked with. James Marlin ended up in Jefferson. Marlin, his wife remained a good friend. And Dad, my husband Robert, took a Carnegie course that said, to think of some object so that you could remember a name. So one day, Stella Marlin came in the door and he says, "Hello, Mrs. Fish." It took. He enjoyed that course. The spring Harley Farnham had come in the fall, we were having Lenten services, and their guest speaker was Charlie Goff from the Chicago Temple. He had gone in now, and you probably all know the story of how it was a little mission church. It was almost dead in the water. This great building, 24 stories high with the great spire on top. And it was a mission church. It was supported by the conference. Charlie Goff had gone in, and I learned a lot from him. He looked around at the furniture that was falling apart, the things that were neglected, and he said, "What a wonderful place this is. It's wonderful." I think the congregation all fell over. They were shocked to think anybody thought they had a great place. But because of his positive approach, which mirrored my dad's about life and about the church and about all the things that were going on, he lifted that up to become one of the great churches of Methodism today. Dr. Goff is the one who built the parsonage in the spire. And the little chapel way up above the chimes. A wonderful place. Anyway, he came out for this Lenten service. We reconnected immediately, and he remembered my family. And before he went back to Chicago, he asked me if I would come in and develop their youth program. One of the things that gets me is to tell me, nothing has happened. We want you to start something from scratch. I'm on board immediately. So I went into Chicago. Mother moved to Shenandoah and later to Wesley Acres, where she didn't die until she was 90. So she lived a good long life, and we visited her here a lot. Anyway, now I'm in Chicago, and it was a wonderful experience. I also finished my education. That was one of the things I told Dr. Goff. I really want to finish my degree. There was a community college around the corner, and I did a year there, and then they were having a little difficulty, so I transferred down to the University of Chicago, where I finished up. Had a wonderful year down there, still working at the temple, going back and forth, going to school, going to the church, working every evening, developing the youth program. I don't know when I slept, because sometime in there I had to study and finish what I was doing. And then romance reared its loving head with a gentleman from Sydney, Iowa, with whom I had gone to school. We weren't school sweethearts. He had other girlfriends. I liked him probably more than he did me at first. Took me 10 years to get him. And as you can see from his oldest son, I did very well. Very well. He was a Boy Scout executive when I married him. So I knew he'd be a good father. And Bob, I hasten to say, became an Eagle Scout at his father's behesting and is now a writer who does a lot of writing for the Boy Scouts. He's written the last 3 handbooks. So if you have a scout troop or had it in your church, they're using his handbooks. So I came back to Sydney, and I'm still there. I have discovered anywhere you are, Schweitzer said this, you don't have to come to Africa to serve. You, anywhere you are, in whatever situation you find yourself, do everything you can to help everyone you can. That's what you ministers and wives have done all these years. And I think of all the loving people out there whose lives you've touched. And you continue to be part of their lives. You've touched them dearly. And wherever you are now, I know you're not sitting in the rocking chair twiddling your thumbs. And neither am I. I'm never going to retire. And having this background, this wonderful Methodist background, is a sturdy, sturdy, loving way to be. And I admire you all so much.